Okay, so, da sind wir wieder zurück vom Linux-Tag 2011 und jetzt geht es weiter mit dem nächsten Interview und wir haben Joss hier vom OpenSUSE-Projekt und wir machen es in Englisch, oder?
Yeah, preferably.
Ja, aber du kannst auch Deutsch, oder?
Yeah, I can follow German, but speaking it is just too embarrassing, so I'm.
Okay. Dann versuchen wir es auf Englisch. Yeah, so now here on LinuxTag 2011, I'm here with Joss. He's the community manager of OpenSUSE, or...
Well, yeah, OpenSUSE community manager for, well, SUSE Linux these days, or Attachmate, former Novell, basically.
But the Novell brand is...
Well, basically, Attachmate has decided to split up, you know, SUSE from Novell. So now it's, you know, SUSE Linux again, as in the old days, you know, long before I joined.
Okay. And, how is the overall excitement or not in SUSE in Nuremberg with this acquisition?
Well, in the SUSE offices, you know, as far as I can tell, most people are positive. I mean, of course, there's quite a bit of internal chatter about it that, you know, I can obviously not talk about. But, you know, the way Attachmate has been approaching the community, you know, especially, for example, the person responsible initially for getting SUSE as part of Attachmate was active in the OpenSUSE marketing and project IRC channels. I mean, that kind of stuff gives, I think, a very positive signal. You know, I did the interview with Jeff Hohn, and after that, you know, more, well, positive information, I think, came out. So, in general, most people are, you know, I mean, either expecting, you know, we simply have to sit back and wait, see what happens, and that's the same, I think, the attitude of most people in the office. But what we've seen, as far as I can tell, has been, you know, very nice and positive. So, yeah, most people are optimistic, and so am I. It's been really cool.
Yeah, what is your expectation from the new owner?
I think the idea of, you know, giving SUSE its own independent focus again, I think, is really cool. You know, allowing SUSE to stay on its own feet again. I think that in itself, you know, makes clear that they want SUSE to work on its own future, you know, really strongly. And yeah, gosh, what are the expectations? I mean, I think it's nice, and it gives the idea that, you know, they like SUSE. I mean, what they've been saying about free software, you know, the importance of working with the community, that's all positive, but what's going to happen? I don't know, it's probably going to be business as usual, I guess, for the foreseeable future. And after that, well, I mean, you never know what's going to happen in 5 years anyway, so.
Yeah, but there were rumors going on that people have to leave or something like that. So it's maybe a little bit disappointing.
Well, there have been some articles, indeed. I don't know how much is public, and I don't know a lot about it in any case, but yeah, some people have been let go. But that goes, you know, if you merge two big companies, there is a lot of overlap, you know, in HR and sales, and those are most of the departments. I mean, as far as I know, Nuremberg and Prague have not been hit, so yeah, sure, people have been let go, but it hasn't been a big drain on the SUSE side of the company.
So we just have to wait to look what is coming up. Let's hope that OpenSUSE is going well, and SUSE Linux, the company is now completely in Nuremberg, or?
Well, Nuremberg and Prague, yeah. Nuremberg will be the main office, and well, Prague will be the secondary office, basically, or the second SUSE office.
And there will be also a new leader?
Yeah, we got a new boss, but because I don't know how much is public, I
I didn't remember the name, but I heard about it. So what is your job exactly at the moment at
Well, it hasn't changed. I'm still supposed to help make OpenSUSE a success, both by working within the OpenSUSE community and within not Novell anymore, but SUSE Linux now. So that means in the community, you know, I'm mostly active in the marketing team because, well, I'm not a coder or a packager. So although I'm trying to learn a little packaging, but I work with the marketing team. And I have a budget, of course, for, you know, promotional work, marketing work, which I try to spend as wisely as possible. We're currently busy on organizing the OpenSUSE conference.
When will it be?
Sorry?
The OpenSUSE conference?
Yeah, the OpenSUSE conference is going to be in September. It's not officially announced yet because we haven't basically signed anything yet, but it's most likely going to be in a really cool location.
But you don't gonna tell us where?
Not yet. You'll hear most likely on Friday.
That will be the announcement.
Maybe I'll, yeah. If you want, I might come back and talk about that.
Okay, but cool location in, oh yes, in September.
Yeah, September.
So in September there's also, or in August there's the open the summit,
the desktop summit. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Here in Berlin.
Yeah.
And you're from the KDE team, well, or you're a little bit connected with KDE?
More in the middle, I guess. Now I'm gonna be responsible for all the press and marketing side for both the KDE and the GNOME teams. You know, I basically for the desktop summit, and KDE and GNOME marketing people are involved both. Yeah, marketing the desktop summit is going to be pretty cool. I mean, it's a huge event. You know, we expect about 1,400 people, or between 1,000 and 1,400, because that's basically all we can handle. So we just hope it won't be too much more than that. But yeah, I enormously look forward to that, because it's really a gathering. You know, it's one of those meetings where like-minded people come together. I mean, that's to some extent true, of course, for an event like this, but this is more generic and has a lot of people, you know, that don't know each other and have little connection, while the Desktop Summit really is a place where, you know, communities, very tight-knit communities gather, two of them even, which makes it both, you know, interesting and open, and at the same time really a place where friends, you know, meet again. And that creates a really nice atmosphere, and it's really a great place to be.
Yeah, and it's not a fair, it's just a conference, not
yeah,
here, like
it's really to get work done, yeah, and to get
more
to know
coding
each other better.
And
talking yeah,
about
it has
ideas.
Been moving more to discussing though, and you know, getting all noses in the same direction, I'd say. Because in the old days, you know, such conferences were indeed a place where you sat down and you were hacking for a couple of days. But because KDE and GNOME both have grown incredibly, they both have really a strong need to discuss like design choices, more of the kind of social and philosophical sides of the project. And those are really more subjects than, you know, the hardcore let's get some work done side of it. So that's a shift that has been visible over the last, I don't know, 10 years, I guess. And I think it's good. I mean, it makes it shows that we've grown, you know, we've grown up.
What will we see after the Desktop Summit? Are there topics which will come forward and will be pushed? And
well, you see two things usually at a meeting like that. You see on one hand that, you know, a lot of people, they had certain things, like difficult decisions that have had to be made. Like, you know, for example, a technical decision is not so difficult to make over a mailing list, because you outline all the arguments, and then, you know, mostly the arguments are quite black and white, it's true or not. So then you look at the big picture and you say, like, okay, you know, 80% of the arguments are clearly pro solution A, so, you know, we would be crazy to go for solution B, and then everybody agrees and you have a solution. But if you talk about something like design, you know, or more for example, marketing, of course, you know, it's also a lot more vague, or big, you know, design decisions, like, you know, are we gonna build a whole new user interface or a new scripting engine? Those kind of decisions are much better done face to face. So what you will see is that a lot of people come to the Desktop Summit to make such decisions and talk about those things. And that is, I think, one very important part of the Desktop Summit. And another thing is that a lot of people will come there with like grand visions, big ideas, things they have been working on they want to show, and that will set, you know, the pace for the future of the free desktop. And that is also, well, the second crucial part, I think, for the Desktop Summit. It's a place where new ideas are born, or at least, you know, where they grow up and find a following, and then, you know, in the months after the Desktop Summit, they get executed. So it's a place, you know, where you can share the ideas, the things you've been working on, where people, you know, all get together to find direction. You know, I mean, it is, free software communities have a tendency to all work in slightly different directions, and a meeting like this can get everybody, you know, go in the same direction for the same goals. That's a very powerful thing, and that's why a Desktop Summit is incredibly important.
So last year, the Academy and the GUADEC were separated. So this year, they are combined to the Desktop Summit. Why again? Why?
So the first Desktop Summit in Gran Canaria was a big success in many ways. I mean, maybe not as much as some people expected. You know, there were definitely people who were thinking, you know, along the lines of, oh gosh, they're going to merge GNOME and KDE. Well, I doubt that's going to happen any day soon. Mm-hmm. But the Desktop Summit did provide a place, you know, where some collaboration and getting to know each other was possible. And I think in that way it was really positive. And, you know, the vast majority of both communities basically wanted to do it again together. So that was really good. But especially the GNOME community was in a, you know, in the position that they were working on GNOME 3. And they could really use, you know, a GUADEC where they could really focus on getting GNOME 3 out of the door. So that's why for them it made a lot more sense to not do a joint conference again right away and just, you know, let it go for 1 year and then do it again this year. And that's basically what happened. We're going to be together again, and, you know, it's always a big surprise what's going to come out of it, but I hope a lot of collaboration
and new projects combined together. I mean,
Who knows?
Hopefully. I mean, from my perspective as a user, it would be nice to switch through the desktops and use the same data, putting semantic informations with Nepomuk inside my Dolphin tracker, and use it on the GNOME side and vice versa. So, I mean, the users, some will stay with one desktop, but there are some which switch from time to time.
Even if you don't switch, it does make sense if you use, you know, a GNOME, say you use Evolution in a Plasma desktop, then it would be nice if your appointments would still show up, you know, in the calendar, in the clock on the panel, right? And right now, that is not the case because there's no data sharing going on, and that is definitely the kind of thing that, you know, a lot of people, including myself, would love to see. But the technical barriers for that are pretty big. In some areas, it's happening. For example, the tracker people and the Nepobook people, you mentioned that example, they work together a lot already. And for them, you know, it's not a big issue, apparently. But Evolution Data Server, for example, and Akonadi are basically both doing, you know,
the same, but...
Yeah, exactly.
And completely different.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, that's not really easy interoperable, at least not right now. And, well, that's unfortunate.
Okay.
You know, it's something which would be nice to have, yeah. But I don't think that the Desktop Summit per se will have the effect of, you know, creating the match between those right away. I mean, it's not like, you know, because we have the Desktop Summit next year, we're going to have, you know, Evolution Data Server can be used as a backend for KDE applications and Akonadi can be used as a backend for GNOME applications. That's just not going to happen, right? At least not in a year. But but at least what you could hope is that the next time a team in either of the projects decides to embark on, you know, a grand project to create a new shared infrastructure for their project, that they will at least think about the fact that, you know, half of the Linux users doesn't use their applications but uses something else and would like to have interoperability. So it's more of a thing for the future, and I think it's going to take a lot of desktop summits before, you know, this mentality of, you know, let's not try to create separate silos but let's work together is going to sink in.
Mm. What's with Canonical and Unity? I mean...
Well, I really hope that Mark will come and that we will be able to, you know, discuss what's going on with Unity and also with the Qt support that Canonical has, because they're creating silos and that's just not helping anyone. I mean, you know, you currently have GNOME and KDE, and then you have a GNOME on Ubuntu, which is like a third, slowly becoming a third separate desktop, right? Not just because of Unity, but even before that, they already had the indicators and the other stuff that you as a programmer had to support separately. It's not a huge amount of work, but it's getting more and more. And the other distributions were not picking it up. Well, actually, OpenSUSE has been working on that, but the developer who was working on that basically, you know, hasn't been able to work a lot on that lately. So we have some support for the lib indicators and that stuff around it, but not a lot. And they also didn't manage to get it upstream. So now, yeah, there is like a third world. And when Mark announced Qt for Ubuntu, well, I actually complained about it in my blog. As far as I could tell, he's, well, proposing to have some special integration libraries for Ubuntu for that as well, which makes a fourth silo. And I think that's really a bad idea. I mean, I don't oppose at all, you know, to create new functionality or to add things, but please don't keep it, you know, Launchpad and Ubuntu specific and, you know, keep it in your little world. But, you know, share. That's what free software, you know, is built on. Yeah. Yeah, it's what it's about, and that's what works best in the long run. Right, I mean, Xandros and Linspire, they did pretty cool stuff, you know. Yeah. I mean, Linspire, I recently saw, I believe, who's that, the name of that guy behind Linspire? Michael Robertson or something like that. He tweeted, I think, about Linspire's App Store, right? Because they had what the Apple App Store, they had that a long time ago, click and run. And yeah, it looks exactly the same. It works exactly the same. If you see a screenshot, you're like, okay, so that is clearly where Apple got the idea from, right? It's a website where you see ratings, comments, and you click, and it's installed and running.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's 5 years old,
oh,
or something
if
like
not
that.
Longer. Yeah, 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 2004 or something. So, you know, they had that, right? They had cool stuff. And at some point, they even tried to make that available for other distributions, but that was basically too little too late. Right, they all worked in their own little silo. Zendros did, and Linspire did, and come on, how many people these days know Zendros and Linspire anymore? Yeah. Right, they
Zendros
didn't have
is
Zendros doesn't exist anymore. Linspire is kind of, you know, well, on life support somewhere. Right, I mean, they didn't contribute to the wider world of free software, and they've become completely irrelevant. And their contributions, well, there haven't been any contributions. I mean, sure, what they did, a lot of what they did was open source, but it didn't actively push it upstream. So it has been irrelevant for, you know, the greater future of free software. And if Mark isn't careful, then that is the direction Ubuntu is going, right? They can have a lot of users, but if they don't actually make a difference in the big picture, then it's just going to be a footnote in history at some point. That would be sad. Because they do cool stuff.
Really pity.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, it's really good that what they did with Unity is it's definitely interesting.
And also, you know, with Wayland with a new...
Well, they're not really doing anything on that, right?
I don't know.
Yeah. But, I mean, the ideas behind that kind of stuff is really good, and they actually do write a lot of code, but because of the contributor license agreement or whatever it's called, it's kind of closed off from at least a lot of free software contributors, and that is just, you know, too bad. So I really hope that the Desktop Summit can help solve that, and it's also a topic for the OpenSUSE conference, you know. Like last year, we, you know, collaboration is important for us as a distribution, for me personally as well, and it is for the Desktop Summit. So this is really something, you know, we're working on it, we're giving it a lot of attention, we're open, so, you know, I just hope Mark will step forward and help out as well.
Okay. let's get back to OpenSUSE. The OpenSUSE 11.4 is available some weeks.
Well, it was released in March, actually, so some months already. That's 2 months already.
Okay. No. It's also 8 weeks then, so...
Yeah, okay, yeah, sure. Some weeks. Depends on your definition of some.
So what's new in 11.4?
Oh, lots of stuff. I mean, there has been improvements, you know, to the underlying stuff like the kernel, but also a bunch of improvements to Zipper, the package manager, which basically got a lot of faster and can handle, you know, bad network connections a lot better. It downloads simultaneously from several servers, you know, each package at once. What else? Well, one really cool thing, I think. I mean, of course, you know, the latest KDE, the latest GNOME, you know, lots of smaller improvements, exactly. But what I think is really a significant thing for OpenSUSE users is Tumbleweed. Tumbleweed is basically a rolling release repository. And if you don't know what a rolling release is, it's basically, you know, what Arch Linux and Gentoo have. Arch and Gentoo, they don't do releases per se. Well, they do releases, but they're just a snapshot. So anytime a package is stable, you know, they consider the new version of LibreOffice stable, then they just release it to the repositories. So as a user, simply anytime you update, you have the latest and greatest software. You don't have to look for a newer version of KDE, because if it's released and stable, you will have it. And that is exactly what Tumbleweed is for OpenSUSE.
So I don't have to put unstable repositories in my list. Can use Tumbleweed. And
what we saw with how people used OpenSUSE was that you basically had three kinds of users, basically. Let's say four. Four kinds of users. One, you had the people who just used a stable OpenSUSE, right? They had update repository, they did security updates, and that's it. Then the second kind of people, they add like one or two repositories, right? The games repository, maybe to have some extra games, Pac-Man, of course. And maybe, you know, they want the latest GNOME or the latest KDE. So some updated applications. And the third group of users, they added, you know, 10, 20, sometimes 30 different repositories because they wanted the latest kernel, the latest firmware, the latest GCC, the latest libraries. They wanted the latest KDE and the latest GNOME and the latest Banshee and the latest LibreOffice and the latest Firefox and the latest... So that got messy, right? I mean, OBS, which we use to build packages, is really powerful because every package it builds in a clean VM, which means that you're always ensured that the package is built specifically for that OpenSUSE release, which makes, you know, having 20 or 30 repositories at least a bit more stable than it would be on another distribution that doesn't have OBS. But still, there is a limit to what you can do. I mean, at some point, if OBS builds for 11.4, but you have, you know, a newer kernel, a newer Xorg, a newer, you know, library X, Y, and Z, then in no way can you really claim that your distribution is OpenSUSE 11.4 anymore, right? It's like a weird hybrid between newer and older. And that just begs for trouble, right? It will break at some point. So what some users did is they added Factory to their repositories, and they simply, Factory is a development tree of OpenSUSE. But in Factory, we have release candidates, betas, alphas even, right? Or even snapshots of the development of KDE and GNOME. I mean, that's crazy unstable. That's just, that doesn't work very well most of the time. Well, I mean, it works most of the time, but once a month, you will come home, you know, you will have had your computer do a update last night, you know, and you'll boot up your computer and, nothing, you know, breaks. You're looking at a command prompt, right? So, and that's a fact of life there. And that's, of course, you know, not really acceptable for the average user. So, with Tumbleweed, we basically have a solution for user number three, the user that has these 20 or 30 repositories, because Tumbleweed is like Factory in that it always has the latest and greatest, but not the unstable software. It only has the stable versions of all software. And this also means that you're always up to date. You don't have to hunt for newer versions of applications. But it also means you don't have to install newer versions of OpenSUSE. Because by the time OpenSUSE 12.1 comes out, you will be running it if you do a weekly update of Tumbleweed. And that's really cool.
So the next release is 12.1. Yeah. Why not 11.5? And why not 12.1? 5.0.
Yeah, so we had a discussion about our versioning, and it didn't make sense, right? Basically, what we did was kind of arbitrary at some point, say like, well, you know, let's go to the next major version number. But there was no philosophy behind it. It was pure arbitrary. There was no significant difference in the size of the upgrade between 10.0 and 10.1 versus 10.3 and 11.0, right? It was completely the same, basically, just newer versions of all the software. There was nothing special why you would call it 12.0, so that's why we went for 11.4 after 11.3, right? There was a discussion, and everybody said, well, there's nothing why we would call it 12.0, so let's go on in the 11.x series. Well, yeah, that's fine, but, you know, we'll never have something that's big enough to call it 12.0, so we're gonna go until 11.60, and we're still, you know... And it wasn't clear to everybody what the next release is gonna be. So finally, there was, you know, Andreas Jaeger started a discussion about it, and in the end it was decided to have something that looks a lot like our current schedule, except that it has a philosophy behind it, which is fairly simple. We have 8-month release schedule. That means every 3 releases, the dates become the same again. Right, with 8 months you have, guys, you're not incredibly good at dates, but it's a March, November, somewhere June, and then March again or something like that. Every third is basically again, every fourth is basically the same again. So why not, you know, look at that and say like, okay, so in the 12 series you have 3 releases, 12.1, 12.2, 12.3. Okay. And then at the same date you have 13.1 and 2 and 3. So because we didn't start at 12.0, because then people would think that there's a difference between, you know, the size of the upgrade between 12.0 and 12.1 versus, you know, from 12.2 to 14. Yeah, I know. It's not even easy to explain.
But now I understood it.
Yeah. At least there is some kind of philosophy behind it. We can figure out what the next release will be without a big fight about it. It still looks like the old schedule.
A little bit like Ubuntu is doing it with 11.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's a bit like that. And, you know, a lot of people liked the fact that it was unique. Well, yeah, it still makes fairly little sense. Hence, nobody else does it. Hence, yeah, it is unique. But I guess this is very much, you know, SUSE, right? This is how we are. We like to have something weird and are perfectly happy with that. Sorry for the rest of the world.
Okay, so what are the new points in, or the new features in 12.1?
Well, there are a couple of things that are in the work, and of course it will have the usual updates, and because the way OpenSUSE works, you know, we're very much a bottom-up community. We don't have, you know, a technical steering group or a benevolent dictator, you know, telling people what to do. So it's really hard to say, like, you know, we're going to have this and this and this. But I have been asking around and talking to some people and at least, you know, trying to figure out what the plans are for a lot of people. And, well, a couple of the things that we will have will be Andrew Wafa is going to work on the Migo tablet version. Andrew Wafa is the guy who did, well, the previous Migo on OpenSUSE work. But Migo tablets, the old Migo tablet is kind of dead.
Yeah.
So, but he's going to work on the new Migo tablet, which is nice. Another cool thing is Snapper, which is a kind of snapshot module for Yest. What Snapper basically does is if you do an upgrade, it can roll back the upgrade, basically. It supports the ButterFS snapshot technology.
Okay, like an AlphaUm snapshot, but with ButterFS.
Well, it's more like if you change things on your drive, ButterFS can record those changes and then you can roll them back. It's kind of like a backup system. And we're working on basically building that into our upgrade process so you can actually use this when you install a package and something breaks, you can roll back all the upgrades you did.
Okay.
Which is really nice, of course. So, and this has to have some easy to use way of working with it. So that means we're going to have integration in Yest, which makes it, you know, just like you can set up a virtual machine on OpenSUSE with a couple of mouse clicks. It will be very easy to use, you know, these ButterFS snapshots with a couple of mouse clicks.
And I heard Zax is back.
Yes, well, it's not back yet, but we have a huge number of Google Summer of Code projects this year. We have 16, which is, you know, well, there aren't a lot of distributions active in the Google Summer of Code, but we have more than, you know, all others combined. And one of those projects is to bring Sex-Free back from, you know, the digital grave, and, well, Sex2, and port it to the new Xorg and make it available again. So a lot of users will probably be happy with that. I guess it's mostly a power user thing, but yeah, it can help you out in case of issues. So it's nice.
Okay, thanks a lot for having you here, talking.
Oh, my pleasure.
About the new OpenSUSE and the Desktop Summit stuff, and maybe we see each other again next year.
Yeah, or maybe on Friday when I have the location of the OpenSUSE conference to announce.
And on the Desktop Summit in Berlin.
On the Desktop Summit,
in
of
August.
Course. Yeah, you guys are going to be there?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
We will do interviews there. We will live stream. And
very nice.
So it's our third big event this year.
Okay, cool, cool. It's good to see Tux Radio gear in Europe. That's really nice.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jas, and have a nice day.
Das war eine Sendung von Radio Tux, herausgegeben im Jahr 2011 unter Creative Commons by Non-Commercial Sharealike.de. Lieder sind eventuell anders lizenziert. Mehr Infos auf radiotux.de. Unterstützt von Open Coffee,
B Linux
und Tarent
Fairtrade Software.